My name is Suzanne Stallings. This is 1 o'clock on Friday, January the 30th. I'm at 706 West 10th, the home of Nora Rose. Nora, can you state your full name for us?
Nora Miller Rose, and I was born April 23rd, 1943, here in Georgetown.
Thank you. Now, did you grow up in Georgetown?
I've lived in Georgetown all my life. I spent 3 years in Houston. I attended Texas Southern for 2 years, and that's why I went. And then my husband got sick, and we moved back to Georgetown, so I've been here ever since.
Okay. Where did you live when you were young?
Believe it or not, right across the street. Okay. 703 and a half West 10th Street.
Huh.
All of those houses have been torn down now, but when the urban renewal came through. That was my home.
Neat.
And I feel proud to be back on the same street that I lived on when I was born.
Yes, that really means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what was this neighborhood called then? Did it have a name?
Well, we were in what they call the Grasshopper.
Grasshopper?
Mm-hmm. The town was kind of divided, and the tracks was south, and then Grasshopper was west, and then the ridge is north.
The ridge.
And that's where the school was located, and on the ridge.
Okay. What did your parents do for a living?
Well, my dad was a mechanic, and my mom stayed at home a long time, taking care of us kids, but then she started doing house cleaning for different people here in town.
There were a bunch of y'all?
10. And I think I'm like seventh. Yeah, seventh from the top down.
You're one of the younger
ones. So I have three brothers younger than I am.
Yeah. Did you have relatives here in Georgetown?
Oh, yes. We have lots of relatives. When we were growing up, we wondered, you know, my dad and mom would always say, be careful who you have a relationship with, said, because it may be kin to you, but let us know first. So, and my kids, they complained about that a lot. We don't know even who we related to. I said, well, just ask me before anything gets started. So we always had a big joke with that with the kids.
Yeah. Did y'all belong to a family, a church here in Georgia?
Yeah, at the time we were growing up, the name of our church was Gay Hill Baptist Church.
Okay.
And then later in the years when, you know, things change, and with gay being on the name of the church, a lot of gay people started calling to see if that was a gay church, and so then they ended up calling the church Calvary Hill Baptist Church.
Okay.
And that's what it is now.
What do you remember about school when you were young, when you were in the elementary grades?
I know you've heard this before about our seven or eight rooms we had at Carver, where all the kids went from first to 12th grade. And, you know, back then when you're young, you don't pay any attention to what's going on. You're just in school, enjoying yourself, and, you know, not really realizing. But as you start to get into high school, then, you know, things change, because you realize, you know, that the books you use, and they used, some of them didn't have all the pages in, and you go to study, especially at home, and you get to some and didn't have the pages. Well, you'd have to put that off until you could get back to school and find somebody else with that page in their book so you could finish up your homework. And then, you know, no typewriters. Even when I went to college, I had to pay to have my papers, you know, typed, because I didn't know how to type.
Oh, okay.
And I never took the time to learn how. I just, you know, because once I got out of high school, I did housekeeping, too, before I actually went into college, and on the weekends. And that's just a way of life, you know. We had to work, too.
Sure.
And so, as things, you know, progress, we just, you know, notice more. Because the older we got, the more we noticed. And then just Oh, the activities and all, you know, they were good because we didn't know any better. But then, you know, as we look back now, we can see where we had lost a lot. But in our own little union, you know, we gained too, because when you, I guess, I don't know the word, when you don't have, then, you know, you are able to do what you need to do with what you do have.
Sure.
And so, you know, we knew we had to really study hard and make the best of our education for what it was. And the teachers we had, you know, we thought they were the best.
Okay.
But even though, you know, later, when you go to college, you learn, well, my English wasn't quite good enough, so I had to do a remedial English, a remedial math, you know, because what I was taught just didn't go with college.
Yep.
And so that kind of puts you back, you know, mm-hmm. with your grades, because you got to take that remedial course and
sure.
then take the regular course.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I learned a lot after that, but just being in school, you know, we did good.
Uh-huh.
And then after we graduated, a lot of people went to college. I only went for a couple of years, and then I went to nursing school here in Georgetown. So
great.
I worked as a nurse for 40 years before I retired.
Wow, where
but
were you a nurse?
Here in Georgetown, at Georgetown Hospital. I started off with Dr. Bonneau and Dr. Gaddy and Dr. Shepherd.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, you know, you have to be the very best in order to be black and get a job. And this may be out of order when I talk about my job, but when we all graduated, I was the first honor graduate in the class.
Congratulations.
But when it came time to be hired, we had interviews at the hospital. And it was three of us being interviewed. And so the two white girls were interviewed before I was. And then one of them, it was 11-7 job, so she didn't want that. And so Ms. Comeback, who was director of nurses, she truthfully told me, you know, she said, if the other girl hadn't decided she didn't want 11-7, we wouldn't have a spot for you. And so by her not wanting that job, I got the 11-7 job. And then, you know, Ms. Comeback, when you work, we're used to doing the best that we can do,
sure.
you know.
Sure.
And so she always told me, every time she see me, I don't know what I would have did if I hadn't hired you.
Yeah.
You know, and it always made me feel good. And that's what we just have to do. We have to be the best in order to get some positions.
Yes.
And I think that's where it's been with a lot of them.
Yes.
So back to the school.
Back to the school. What about your fond memories? You were saying you liked a lot of the teachers. About your friends and your activities.
Oh, we had good relationships. You know, you'd have your little bickering at times, just
sure.
like anybody else, because that's what's normal. But, you know, as a small group, we got along well. It was 11 in my graduating class in 1961. And I was a valedictorian in my class.
All right.
And, you know, we'd have our little junior-senior proms and have them right there in the chapel. And what we call the chapel is the 9th and 10th grade class, and the 6th and 7th, 7th and 8th grade class was in a divided room where you pull up a petition.
Uh-huh.
And then once we have something big, we call it, they would move the petition.
Uh-huh.
And then we'd have one big room
uh-huh.
to, you know, do whatever we need to do.
Yeah.
And so we'd invite other schools like Round Rock and Belton and Bartlett, so we'd have a good time. And all of the kids worked real good together. We'd had a football team,
uh-huh.
and we'd get to play at the white field, because our field wasn't anything but dirt. That we didn't have any grass, dirt, and rocks, and that's what they practiced on.
Yeah.
But when they'd have a real game in the 60s, it might have been worse before my time, but you know, this is kind of how they played. And we'd play on an opposite day from what the other kids would play at Georgetown High School. And we had our little band, one drum.
Yeah.
And, and we had our majorette, and we'd have on blue and white shirts. Back then, we didn't know what wearing pants was. We all had to wear some dresses or skirts to school.
Yeah.
And so we have our blue skirts on. The boys have on their blue pants and white tops. And then the majorettes, they did have little suits that somebody had made for them, but they were nice. And so, you know, we halftime, we'd march. It'd be about 20 of us, maybe not that many, but oh, we were so proud.
Yeah.
And then later on, they got a band, you know, and that was after my time, but this is what I had.
But good memories.
Oh, yeah, very good.
Yeah.
And the same thing with basketball. You know, I played basketball, me and my sister Ella. She's expired.
Uh-huh.
But we were kind of stars on the team back then, we thought. And so we love basketball because then we get to travel. And so, you know, just like I say, it was a small group, but we were together, and we enjoyed it. And everybody watched out for everybody, you know, so that really made it good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, did you graduate from high school in Georgetown? And if so, what school did you graduate from?
I graduated from Carver.
Carver, okay.
And that was in 1961.
Okay. What was it like to go there?
Well, this is the only school I knew.
Uh-huh.
I went to that school the whole time I was in. We didn't have kindergarten. A lady out in the city kind of had a little kindergarten that she did on her own. That was Mary Bailey, and that's what started Mary Bailey Daycare Center, Head Start. And so she taught the kids, you know, just there in her daycare. So that's where kids went. That she had room for kindergarten. And then we started with first grade. And first through 12th, we went to Carver. And before that time, it was Marshall. And then it was Marshall Carver. So,
yeah.
And then it ended up being Carver.
Okay. Do you have some not so good memories of school?
Oh, yes, I do. It's just looking back. Were one of the things I mentioned about the books, and then the fact that we didn't have courses that would lead us through to a better college start.
Yes.
After we got started in college, you know, and made our way through the first year, and I'm speaking for myself. Other people may not have this problem, but I did. Even though I was a valedictorian of my class, you know, when I got to college, it was altogether different.
Mm-hmm.
And just the thought, you know, that we had to walk back and forth to school, which that was good. We'd all walk in groups back and forth. But, you know, on those rainy days, we didn't have a bus that would come and pick us up. We still had to bundle up and try to get to school the best way we could in the rain and bad weather or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And the same thing with eating in the lunchroom. There's a few people that could afford to eat in the lunchroom, but, you know, we couldn't, so occasionally we'd get to eat in the lunchroom. But we would walk home at lunchtime, eat, and then walk back to school. And it's just, I don't know, some back with the books and courses and the fact that, you know, we didn't have nice football fields and things like that. But, like I said, you know, that's all we had, so we did the best we could with that.
Now, what did you and your family and friends do for fun in Georgetown?
Well, let me see what we... we went to church, and we have, you know, different activities in church.
Mm-hmm.
And we would visit each other. I had one... Well, not, I had some other friends, but my very best friend was Cynthia Mason. And we'd visit almost every day, back and forth. And we were both in walking distance, and it was a railroad track up about two blocks from here. And then she lived on West Street, so we'd walk the railroad tracks I'd walk her almost home. If we went through with our conversation, she'd walk me back. We'd do that two or three times because we were still talking and having fun and, you know, just having something to do. And that was a lot, just visiting from people's homes, you know. It wasn't a whole lot to do, you know, back then.
Yeah.
And so when you get good friends, you know, you just visit with them and
yes.
go to church. And, you know, that was kind of it for me.
Yeah. Now, how did your life change after school? You've told me a little bit about what you did. This is, did you get married, have kids, get a new job, continue your education?
Okay.
And you went on to college.
After I graduated from school, I had went to college at Texas Southern in Houston for 2 years. And then my husband got sick, so we moved back to Georgetown. And then once I got back to Georgetown, started having babies early. I had one even when I went to college, my oldest son. But my mom and my sister kept him while I attended school. And then once I got back to Georgetown, my mom continued to help me with my children. And then I was having a bad time with my marriage, and eventually I got divorced. But I decided I need to get some type of education or some type of vocational study that I could, so if anything happened in my marriage, then I would be able to take care of my children. And so I went to the Georgetown Hospital LVN course.
Oh, okay.
And at that time, the school was held right there at the hospital, and we'd have our classes, and then we'd get to go out on the floor and work. And while we were in school, well, they gave us a little stipend while we worked to help us along. And then, like I said, when we finished, then we were offered a job there at the hospital. So I told you my situation with being hired. And since that time, I've worked at Georgetown Hospital for 40 years. I just retired, and I started in 67, and I retired in 07. Well, actually, late 06. But, and so I was there that whole time.
Yeah.
And so I've worked all different areas, met so many interesting people. And just being the best that you can be, you know, and I'm not bragging on myself, but I got so many compliments, you know, where when patients would come in, they'd request me to be their nurse, you know, as if I was on, you know, if they was being admitted. And I had several patients, you know, just whenever they came in, it was just a joy, you know.
Yeah.
And so they'd always say, oh, you just make my day. I'm so glad to see your face and, you know, that type thing. So I knew a lot of people and met a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so that's about the only job. That was the only job I had, so I don't know anything else about, you know, the working process.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was it for me, and I loved it, and I ended up hurting my back, so I had to quit. And then after that, I started with all these other medical problems. I shouldn't be saying that on there.
No. Were you involved in the effort to desegregate Georgetown schools?
At that time, I was in Houston, because it was during 62-63, I think, that they really got started, but they didn't get integrated until 68. So I was back during that time, but you know, I didn't really have a big part in what was going on.
What did you think should be done? What do you think should have happened about it all?
The integration process itself?
Yeah.
Well, I was glad to see it happen. Just the fact that I knew from experience that the kids would have a hard time otherwise, you know, because kids were beginning to be more aware of different careers and all. And, you know, if you wanted to be a doctor or anything in science, chemistry, we just didn't have those subjects, you know. And so if you wanted to go to college, you'd be completely lost if you were going to be even an RN probably, because there's so much you would be listed. And I know, you know, a lot of the kids went to school, and we had some lawyers and doctors and school teachers and, you know, a little bit of everything. And I don't know, you know, how much they had to struggle to get going, but I'm sure the kids that graduated a lot later than we did and graduated in the white schools had more advantage on courses and things. They could decide what their career was going to be once they finished school.
Yeah, how did your family feel about all this as it was going on?
Well, it was kind of scary for my parents because my brother, Harvey Miller, was a big part of all of this. And he's the one that really got it going, him and his wife. She was a PTA president.
Okay.
So working with PTA and him and other people, you know, he started working. And then the people from Southwestern, they chimed in and... So they got him started, and then when it was getting ready to go to court, they, you know, I think it asked him, well, have you ever been up there to try to enroll anybody? And he said no. And so then he got some of his kids and my nieces and nephews and all, you know, to go and just try to enter the schools. And at that point, you know, they said, you know, and everybody knew everybody because then it was such a small town, you know, so they knew Harvey by name, you know, and they told him, Harvey, you know, we can't do this. Said, you know, we'll build y'all a school before we let this happen. And that's what they tried to do. And my parents, and this is something I had just talked to him not too long ago about. I know my parents were, you know, kind of scared for him because so much was going on. And with him being the leader of trying to get the schools integrated when everybody else wanted to keep them segregated, well, it put a strain on everybody. And this is one thing, and I called him and asked him that didn't come up in the discussion that they had. Because, like I said, part of it I was in Houston, and part of it I wasn't, you know, really active in because I was going to school, too, then. And... my nursing school, and I asked him because this didn't come up, and I didn't know if they were trying to not say a whole lot because Dr. Bonneau was there or what, and I don't want to say, I'm just going to say it, and then you can cut out what you want to. The fact that he had got a lot of threatening telephone calls, plus somebody burned a cross in front of his house. And that didn't come up in that discussion. And that's what I was saying. Is this something I wasn't supposed to say anything about or whatever? Because I wanted to get up and ask him the question, didn't this happen? And then I said, well, he didn't bring it up, so, you know, I didn't want to say anything. And he said, yeah, that did happen. And he thought about that after everything was over with. And then, you know, seemed like they... you know, try to smooth things over. I thought, I didn't think they were just really telling things like it really was, you know, because we did have a hard time. And just like I was talking about the books, the football field, not having the classes we needed, no music until we had people volunteered, Mrs. Hausenfluke. She was a great pianist here in Georgetown, and Miss Bowden, you know, and that's where they started the fine arts school.
Yes.
And then Miss, when we would go to interstate, interscholastic league, you know, competition, once a year we'd go to Prairie View. And Mrs. Hausenfluke would always go with us before we got a music teacher because she would teach solo to one of the students, and that was my good friend Cynthia Fisher. I mean, Mason. And so she'd travel with us to Prairie View every year, and she'd have the best time. And me and Cynthia, we were always together, so we competed in spelling and with Miss Agnes Wilson, and she was a first grade teacher. And so we, you know, always had a good time with that.
Okay.
And so it was a lot of strain, but good times.
Did your, when all this was going on, did your family members and your neighbors and your friends agree?
No. It was some people that didn't agree at all. And I don't know if they were just afraid of, you know, because a lot of people did domestic work. And I don't know if they were afraid of their jobs, just afraid of confrontation or whatever because of, you know, some of the things that had happened during that time. And so And then I know, you know, we had a couple of local black teachers. Paula Taylor was one and Charles Miller. And at that time, neither one of them wanted to see the schools integrated, I think, because of their jobs. And but when schools did integrate, those two, they did take to the white schools. Paulette was in mental with the, what is it, special kids.
Oh, okay.
And Charles Miller was a coach, and then he taught some other school, I mean, course. And then when it came time to integrate, none of our other teachers were hired. And so that made it kind of bad, because the fact that, you know, they were good enough to teach us, and with the disabilities that we had with classroom work and the tools we had to work with, they were fine. But when it came time to transfer them to the white schools, they weren't good enough. And so, you know, it makes you feel bad, the fact that, well, they're good enough to teach us, but they're not good enough to be over here teaching our kids, you know. And eventually, after so many problems and complaints, they did start hiring some black teachers, just, I think, kind of as a token to have them there, because people were complaining. But even before that time of integration, they built a school, which is the Carver now. It used to be West Side when we were going to school. I mean, I had graduated, but when kids were still going to school there, it was West Side. And they put in typing, they put in some chemistry, and they put in some things, you know, that we had requested to try to make it seem like everything was fair, still before they wouldn't integrate. And so that's kind of the way it stood until finally in 1968, all the schools were beginning to be integrated, even if it was so many grades. And that's when Harvey took the kids to the school, because he went to, what is it, Brown and Brown, I think it was the court. And after they got the okay that they could be integrated so many grades, then his kids, my younger brothers, and, you know, all the kids that age group started integrating the schools. And so, you know, all of this is new when I talk to my kids about it. And the same thing, we have a family reunion once a year. And Harvey always bring up history of the reunion of the schools, you know. And some of the kids, they don't remember. They said, all I ever remember is going to a white school, you know.
Sure.
And I said, yeah, well, that was, we were way back when, I guess. So, you know, it's good to keep the kids up on the history.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's why I'm doing a scrapbook on Barack Obama.
Oh,
just
sure.
Stuff I've been cutting out of the paper, you know, and I'm putting that together. And anyway, I said my great-great-grandkids can remember it, you know, because it's just something I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. I'll just put it like that.
This last one you kind of already answered, but how were you affected by desegregation when it came? We've kind of talked about that.
I guess just the fact, you know, with, I don't know really how to put it in words, it affected my kids more than anything, just the fact that I knew they would have a better education than I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a great concern.
Sure.
Because I had five children that went through the school system.
Yeah.
And right now they, you know, doing good, and they have good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just thankful for that. I only had one to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only one who had a desire to go. And mm-hmm. I was divorced at that time, but I worked hard doing extra jobs. I'd do home health after I got off, and that was her money for school beside her grants.
Mm-hmm.
And so she did a 5-year, 4-year college, and then an internship, And she's a probation officer here in Georgetown now.
Super.
And then I have one that worked for the city, one worked for the hospital that just got laid off. You know, when Sandy Davis came in, they were laying off so many people, so she was one of those people. But she's been in the clerical field, you know, and worked there for 15 years. But it's one of those things that happens, so she's looking for a job now. And my oldest son, he's disabled. He has some back problems. And then I have a son that he does flooring on his off time, but then he works for kind of chemical spray company that installs those sprayers, you know, in barns and things to keep the flies and things away from the air. So, you know, it's just with all of this, it just made it better for the kids, our kids, and future for others.
Yeah. Do you have any questions of me?
No, I've enjoyed talking to you. You know, it's amazing when you don't mention all this stuff, and then everything comes back to you, you know, when you start, and you just think where I started and where I am now. It's just, it's amazing.
Well, you've been great.
Well, thank you.
Is there anybody else that we should talk to?
That's what I think. We don't have a lot of people left here in Georgetown, and so many people have died out until, you know, and Harvey, he's already on the list, but like I said, he wanted to send you that information if it helped. And do y'all have things in the library that's going to be in booklet form, or everything's going to be put on?
It will all be
on the TV.
It will all be in the library when it's transcribed. It will be, you know, on the hard copy available in the library. And then they're going to put it on their website, too.
Okay.
So that'll be a thing with a lot of people.
Because he has so much information, my brother Harvey. And I told him, you know, it does no good to be in his garage.
Yes.
When it could be on display at the library or somewhere. And it's not hearsay, it's newspaper clippings, things that, you know, nobody can dispute what happened because it's in writing, not from him, but from, you know, the local papers, even the Austin papers. I think he's so brave, he even called the President of the United States and doing different things. And with Obama, he said he just made some calendars, and I'll get you one, because he said he'd make them, he said he's going to send one to Obama. He's already talked to somebody in the office, he just got elected president now, and he's already talked to somebody in his office to get his signature on one, and he's going to send him one. I said, Harvey, you'll try anything. He said, well, they work.
That's great.
Yeah, and he's really active in San Marcos. He's done as much there since he's moved to San Marcos as he did here in Georgetown.
Yeah. Thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Just like
I said, you know, I'm not a talkative person in public, but one-on-one, I don't have any problems.